It is time for Dig Deep on KEXE KBXE. I'm Heidi Holton. Joining me in the studio, Aaron Brown, our liberal commentator, and Chuck Marone, our conservative. And today we're taking up the idea of education, but in this kind of interesting way. Chuck, I wonder if you kind of lay this out for us. You told us about this article that you saw that made you start thinking about this.
There's one of those clickbait articles. So I'm not going to stand here and say this was a good article. It's one of those dumb clickbait ones. It's like, what's the poorest city in every state? And of course, Brainerd is the poorest city, according to this article, in Minnesota. Obviously, I think that that's a pithy kind of thing. There's a lot of deep nuance to that. And I think that it sells short Brainerd. But the interesting thing was the commentary. They had written a little thing about Brainerd, and they said, we're really surprised that Brainerd is so poor because Brainerd residents are so highly educated. And they cited all these education statistics about how, you know, the people who live in Brainerd have more higher high school graduation rates and higher college graduation rates and a higher percentage of masters and PhDs than most places. Why are they so poor? And it struck in me this chord that I've been milling about for a long time that I wanted us to discuss. And that is, you know, we kind of have, as cultural Scandinavians or you know, the descendants we come from, or very high on education, mm-hmm. there we are known as a state for our education and the way we do things. We have a strong cultural ethic that people will be educated, and we think that that's a very important value. I wanted to have us pause and dwell on it for a minute. It is our dedication to education. Why do we have this? And how well is it serving us today? I think we have this belief, and this is part of what I want to explore, that the more educated our people are, the better off we will be. The more money we put into education, the more time we put into education, the more we elevate education as a central cultural value, the more prosperous and successful we will be as a society. And I got to tell you that I like default to that as well. I'm going to argue against that a little bit, but I kind of subscribe to that notion too. Is there a limit to that? And have we reached that limit? And so I'd like for us in these three segments today to talk about kind of why we believe this, if there are limits to this and if we've reached them, and what maybe like a next education approach in our listening area would look like.
And here's where I jump in and, of course, point out that I'm an educator. And so it's a personal, I have a horse in this race, so to speak.
Sure.
But I think it's important to step back a little bit and talk about what we mean when we say education. Because it's practically a joke when there's an election and who's for education? Well, of course, they're all for education.
Right.
You know, it's what kind of education are you talking about here? You know, because you might hear, for instance, a Republican candidate lament teachers' unions or failing schools in inner cities, but then say, oh, I like vocational training, though, and I like certain kinds of educational programs and things like that. So you'll find the interpretation of what education is. And I think we tend to look at it now through a political lens. What side are you on? And what does that mean for what you think about education? I'd like to go back a step before that and talk about, and this is a talk I give in my classes, because so, I give speeches. I'm a speech instructor. So I tell them to do an informative speech, and I tell them how many sources they need in that speech, and I tell them how to do the outline and introductions, bodies and conclusions. And these are kind of standard, like as old as dudes in robes, you know, kind of parts of education. But I always like to do a little talk where I say, well, here's why, you know, I know you've been through high school and your teachers have always told you these things, and they tell you, don't look at Wikipedia, and they tell you, make sure you cite your sources and do all this stuff. And like, what's the point of it? Well, I always point out that we are, as human beings, products of knowledge. You know, our current society is the result not of one specific thing, but of millions and millions of things that have happened and built on each other. And it all started, I said, way back. I know you've, Guns, Germs, and Steel, Jared Diamond, I know you've read that book, Chuck. And I always come back to, you know, first humans learn not to, I don't know if I can say this, poop where they drink. Can I say poop where they drink, Heidi? Can I get a ruling on that?
Well, it is scatological, but yeah, we'll go with that.
Defecation, okay. Where one consumes water,
sure.
And food.
No, poop's fine. Yeah.
Okay. All right. You know, and when eventually humans realized that they were healthier if they didn't do that. And then they learned that, boy, the plants in the latrine field grew a lot better than the plants other places. And they ate a lot of berries, and those berry plants would grow right in that latrine field. Welcome to farming. Okay. And so those humans learned that and then taught their children. We don't have to, like when we're born in the year 2019, we don't have to relearn that lesson. I don't have to drink tainted water and eat tainted food and learn that all over again. We have knowledge. We're taught at a young age about these things. And some of that knowledge is so embedded in our culture and society that we don't even know where it came from. But that's what knowledge is. That's what education, that's what the academy is about. It's a organized system of gathering knowledge, expressing that knowledge to new people, and then ideally having those new people engage in scholarship, learning, and then expand knowledge so that whether your field is science or whether your field is engineering or whether your field is literature, you have done something maybe, just maybe, to move that needle a little bit further. And in such a fashion, we drive down the road on 1 ton of highly manufactured steel, and we use our phones to play games that were designed by an engineer using signals that come from space. And we do all of these things matter-of-factly, without much thinking at all, because of the expansion of knowledge.
Let me build on that a little bit, because I do think that there's two branches of, I think, what we would call education or knowledge. Mm-hmm. And they're very different. And I'm going to define the way you learn them differently. There's one branch of knowledge where you're passing on something that you understand to someone else. So 2 + 2 = 4 is a kind of rote knowledge. Mm-hmm. And once you learn 2 + 2 = 4, you don't need to go back and learn it again. Like it's embedded in you
now.
Like
a bicycle.
Exactly. So there's a lot of knowledge where it's passing on facts. It's passing on things that you would need to know.
Don't touch a hot stove.
Yeah. Or even like if we get, here's the history of the country. The Declaration was signed in 1776, and here's what it said. Here's why it said it. But there's a different kind of knowledge that is more, let's just call it like wisdom kind of knowledge, where instead of saying, here's the Declaration signed in 1776, it would actually be more of, what's the deeper meaning of the Declaration, mm-hmm. and how does it apply today?
What we would call critical thinking.
Critical thinking.
Yeah.
And so in this branch of knowledge, critical thinking, what you're doing is you're actually iterating off of a set of ideas. And the thing about critical thinking that is so powerful is that you never actually reach the end of that knowledge. You never gain that knowledge and have it be done. Like, I know the Declaration was signed in 1776. I could memorize the different preambles and different parts, and I could be, in a sense, a person who has the knowledge of what is in the Declaration. But a scholar of the Declaration of Independence, or someone with wisdom on it, or this iterated knowledge, is someone who will spend a lifetime studying what went into it. Why did Jefferson use this preamble? Mm-hmm. Why did Ben Franklin make this edit here? What were they trying to communicate? How has that been interpreted throughout the ages and applied to humanity? These are like deeper questions. I feel as if our education system, and because it's difficult to discern the two, often kind of conflates them, mm-hmm. puts them in together as like one. And they're really historically two very different pursuits. We can think of this as, you know, when we set up the Northwest Ordinance and split the country, the Louisiana Territory, into these 6x6 grids, 6-mile by 6-mile grids, we had places for schools in each of them. We set it aside. This is a place where we're going to have a school. And if you read Jefferson's work, Jefferson was thinking people will meet in a school and they'll study Greek and they'll study Latin and they'll read the classics and they'll do this more iterative kind of knowledge. And then you go read some people who were very practical about this, and it was like, no, we're going to teach them how to be good workers. We're going to give them math skills, and we're going to give them writing skills, and we're going to basically make them so they can be, you know, good American citizens, not in the sense that they'll have this deeper knowledge, but that they'll be able to, in modern times, work a cash register and count out change.
And that was kind of the Germanic influence on early America. You know, the Germans were all about, you know, making the best cog in the wheel you can make, and the perfect worker, the perfect citizen, that kind of thing. Whereas a lot of our founders were also well educated in what they call the classical education, going back to ancient Greece and ancient Rome and the classics, the things that stood the test of time that were held up, and you know, things like philosophy and that sort of thing. So that's kind of a divide that happened early. And I think getting back to what you were just saying before you brought that up, you're identifying a very clear split that we talk about in education all the time, which is knowing the stuff is not enough. There's a lot of ways to memorize the answers to a test and pass the test. Retention is one part, you know, can you retain that knowledge? But the part that everybody really wants, and that people who look back and say, I had a good education, the thing they cite is, did they learn how to use the information?
Right.
You know, when I look back, and I'll just tell a little, like my personal angle on education, the reason I feel that in the broad sense, education is so important and why I went into it and why I've politically always been, you know, identified with education. I looked at my own life. I was a very curious boy. And I grew up in a household that my dad ran, my dad was the manager and he didn't run it. My grandpa owned it. My dad lived in a trailer and ran the junkyard. My mom was a homemaker, and I loved books. You know, we went to libraries, so libraries were important. And then I went to school, and these teachers kind of took me under their wing and showed me things. She gave me books that I hadn't heard of, you know, classical novels and things, and, you know, Treasure Island. And I was just exposed to more and more things. And every time I learned something, I felt like there was more purpose to my life. And so I was driven. And then I went into journalism. I went into four-year college, and I learned things that I still use today in my college experience. And I emerged with relatively little debt out of my college experience. And as a result, I sit here and say, wow, boy, howdy, did it work out good for me. You know, I have a good job. I have my family is cared for. The things my parents worried about, I don't worry about. And I feel like my mind is my greatest asset. I can use my mind to do all kinds of things. That's how I make my money. I use my brain. I write things. I say things. And I make money. And I make more money than my dad made. And so all of this stuff together is like, well, why would you ever say no education funding, no education this or that? But I say that now, having been a teacher, knowing that that is not the same experience that everybody has now. And things like the cost, but also the usefulness of the educational experience. The thought I had, and I'm practically shoveling more fuel onto your argument, Chuck. I hope you enjoy the gift. But and I know you know the author because I learned about her from you, but Jane Jacobs writes about credentialing. And she laments credentialing as
do I, yeah.
Yeah, and that's, I think, what you're driving at, too, yeah. Is that the notion of an education not as something that improves your mind, but as something that is a credential that you then carry around like a special feather or a fancy hat that gets you into the right buildings, that is, in fact, the problem, and that we've veered more away from learning to learn, and we now learn how to get the credential, and that's the problem.
It seems like a lot of times when we ask highly educated people who tend to be the people who tend to make policy in this country, the people who tend to decide where we're going to spend money, what our priorities are going to be, they tend to be very highly educated people. And when we ask them, what should our priorities be? They're like, well, of course it should be education. And they have a story very similar to yours. Here's my background. Here's where I came from. Here's where I got. And they point to education as being a really important part of that. And I would tell that same story. But I think when we step back and we look at it and we say, okay, if part of this is the, let's just call it the wisdom part, and part of it is like the technical knowledge part, I will just assert I know a lot of people who I would say are deeply wise, who have a lot of wisdom, and it's wisdom that has come from books, come from just curiosity, that do not have the education side of it at all. And I would also say that there's a lot of people who have all the education credentials and the initials behind their name and the certificates and the whatever you need to get in the door of exclusivity and cross that bar, that are absolute buffoons and like don't have like a lot of knowledge beyond what it says on their certificate that they passed the exam. When I look at where we're at right now as a region, as a culture, I feel like what we have created is a series of exclusivities that create a burden for us, not only to find good people, but also to kind of unleash the productive potential of our people. We've created this kind of high bar to hurdle over, to be considered wise, when the reality is it's not really a very good discernment on whether someone is wise or not. When I hire people today, and I've hired a lot of people in the last 15 years, my hiring process never asks for a resume, never asks for credentials, never asks for your background or your job history. I always start with, I just want your email address. I don't want to even know your name, your ethnicity. I want to know nothing about you. Here's a quiz that is going to, as close as I can mirror, represent what you're going to actually do on this job. So I just hired someone who's an office assistant, and I gave, like, here's a spreadsheet. Can you add up these columns and these rows? Can you do, like, basically, like, these things? And I had 50 applicants, and only five of them could do it. Well, those were the five people that I don't even know the person I hired. I don't even know what degree they have. I don't know what background or credentials they have. I know that they're very competent to do this job. How they got that competence, I don't really care. If we treated people like that, there's a certain priority we put on education that I think actually gets us away from what the value of an education is. Is it to gain this deeper wisdom, which I think adds to the overall cultural knowledge that we have, and then share that wisdom? Is it to create a skill set so you can become a productive part of society? I don't know as our education system actually gets at either of those things very well.
And the thing I keep thinking of that I want to probably come back to as we go on in this series is what I would call the credentialing issue, how that came about. And I think Jane Jacobs talks about this a little bit in her books. But how it came about, it didn't come about in a, like, oh, we're going to do this now. It came about as a result of increasing equality. As more people have access to the academy, to the exclusive halls of power, once limited only to the wealthiest or well-connected, maybe an occasional genius who some patron takes an interest in and sees that they get an education because they are just so brilliant. For the most part, with the post-war era, World War II era, people who had never had access to college education suddenly had access to affordable college education. And these degrees that they were getting were obviously helping them out professionally. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I think Jacob's argument is that the degrees ended up becoming the thing that people keyed on for research.
Yep.
And that, oh, they have degrees, therefore the degree is what got them their success. Well, getting the degree helped them be successful, but it wasn't getting the degree. It was what they did to get the degree that made them successful. And this is the part we struggle with in education is we want, in my case, 2 years, or if a four-year college, the 4 years. We want the years spent in this institution to actually matter to these human beings who walk in the door. We want them to have an experience. A lot of times, partly culturally, partly just the way the world kind of expects things, what the people want is a degree to get the job, or a degree to get the dream, or to the next step on this journey that includes getting this degree. You walk in the door, what do I got to do to get the A, to get the course completed, to get the major completed, to get the degree? And then you have a bachelor's or a master's or whatever many degrees you want. All this costs money. And when you start to look at this as, well, you get the degree, you got to pay XYZ dollars, and some of it's going to come from the government, and some of it, if you're fancy, you want to go to a fancy school, you pay that yourself, or you get a scholarship. Now this is a money game. And don't construe this as a desire not to spend money on education. I think, however, what's happened is in this equality or this perceived equality, what's happened is the burdens of college debt, I know we're going to talk about that, fall disproportionately on those taking out the biggest loans, and that a lot of times people are taking out loans without a clear understanding of how to get to that degree, thinking that the degree is all that matters. And the result is a lot of unrequited dreams and expensive lessons learned and just massive amounts of debt that's now affecting our whole economy because of the way people live and how they afford things.
We'll continue the conversation on education in our next episode of Dig Deep with Aaron Brown and Chuck Marone.